Gilchrist moves over behind Kemp. He goes back to pass again. Runs out to the right.
Still on his feet. Now throws. It's good to Loughlin. At the 10. At the 5. Touchdown!
The John Murphy Show is on the air.
Three-step drop. Oh, he is buried. He is sacked. It is Mario Williams back at midfield.
You got to give me that leg, Will. You got to give me that leg, Will.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the greatest show in sports.
Throws it downfield. Intercepted. Picked up by Jarris Bird. The ball hawk with the interception for the Bills.
Hear all the action, all the excitement of Buffalo Bills football. Right here on
The John Murphy Show.
The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across Western New York.
Tonight on the show, we'll talk with Scott Kazmir of FootballOutsiders.com. He says the Bills' biggest need is at offensive tackle. And we'll check with Rob Rang of CBS Draft Insider. He's got a preview of the Combine coming up, plus some thoughts from Mel Kiper as we approach the NFL Combine next week.
This is pandemonium!
CJ at the 10, 5, touchdown! CJ Spiller, touchdown Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
It is Friday night. Thank you for tuning in. Welcome to John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. We are live tonight at One Bills Drive, and happy that you're able to tune in tonight and spend a nice cold winter evening with us. Want you to participate as well. The phone line's open for whatever's on your mind. 803-0550 is the number. Toll free 1-888-550-2550. You can reach us and follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. The big news in the NFL today, the Richie Incognito, Jonathan Martin story. The report is out, the Wells report. And we want to talk about that tonight. And I want to hear from you. I need direction on this. I need some guidance. I don't know what to think about this report, about this incident, about what it says, about where the National Football League is going. If you haven't heard it, you probably have by now. Ted Wells, the NFL investigator appointed to investigate the harassment that allegedly occurred against Dolphins offensive lineman Jonathan Martin, released his report today, 144 pages. In the report, and it's big, I haven't read it all, I've read some of it. In the report, though, Ted Wells said that Martin was subjected to a pattern of harassment that included racial slurs and vicious sexual taunts about his mother and sister. The report said Richie Incognito and fellow offensive linemen John Jerry and Mike Pouncey harassed Martin. Another offensive lineman and an assistant trainer also routinely came under attack, according to the investigation. Neither one named in the report. But Richie Incognito was named, John Jerry was named, Mike Pouncey was named. Martin's agent, Kenneth Zuckerman, said his client feels vindicated by the report. Incognito's attorney, Mark Schammel, released a statement saying that Wells' report was, quote, replete with errors, and said that Martin was never bullied by Richie Incognito or any member of the Dolphins' offensive line. So, Wells said the report found that Martin was taunted and ridiculed almost daily. He left the team in October. Incognito, at that time, bragged about breaking J. Mart. In a notebook, the lineman used to tally fines and bonuses among themselves. And when the investigation began, Incognito asked another player to destroy the book. But investigators got it anyway. It is lengthy, the report. The details are sordid. It is ugly. The report did reject suggestions that Jonathan Martin made up the claims. Incognito, of course, served a suspension for the final 8 games of the season, 2 without pay. The report concluded that Martin was abused by 3 teammates, but it did qualify some of the assertions in Martin's account. Evaluating Martin's claims was difficult, quote, given his mental health issues, his possible heightened sensitivity to insults, and his unusual bipolar friendship with Richie Incognito. Nonetheless, we ultimately concluded that Martin was indeed harassed by Incognito, who can fairly be described as the main instigator. As I said, it's a long report with a lot going on, but I'm struggling with what happens next. I mean, Incognito has served his suspension, and now what? What happens now? Should he be able to come back? Let's put aside for a second the question as to whether a team would want to bring Richie Incognito in, and he is up there in age and maybe doesn't have a whole lot to offer an NFL team, but is that it for punishment for him? I would think so. I kind of think so. What about Jonathan Martin? Does he get a chance to play again? Already, the owner of the Dolphins, Stephen Ross, has said that neither Incognito nor Martin would be on their roster next year. What team would take a chance, I guess, on Jonathan Martin, knowing what they know about his fragile state and the way he left the Dolphins last year in late October, early November? And in a larger sense, what does this issue say about the locker room culture? We talked about it when it first came out in November. Obviously, the claims that Martin made were not exaggerated. What he said happened actually happened. He was subject to vicious taunts and verbal abuse from Richie Incognito and, according to the report, some other players. But what do you do about it? I mean, should there be penalties immediately? I don't know. I don't think so. I think what has to happen, and it's going to take some time, is a slow, gradual change in the culture of locker rooms, NFL locker rooms, college locker rooms, hopefully trickling down to high school locker rooms, a slow, gradual change and an acceptance that that kind of behavior is not accepted. It is not acceptable. You can't get away with that, which does not mean that Richie Incognito should be subject to a lifetime ban from the sport or further punishment, fines, jail time, anything crazy like that. No. If he can play and help somebody, he should have the right to play. Now, whether or not somebody picks him up is another issue. But I think he's served his penalty, basically an 8-game suspension, 2 games without pay. I think the issue has served to educate football fans and sports fans about what's acceptable in a locker room culture and what is not, what is over the line. Clearly, Richie Incognito's actions, and according to the report from the Wells, from investigator Ted Wells, actions from John Jerry and Mike Pouncey crossed the line, clearly crossed the line, should not be accepted. But do they have to pay a price? Does there have to be a penalty? Or can we walk away from this and say, this doesn't happen anymore? I think that's really the way to go. I'd like to hear what you think. What would be the acceptable response? How grievous a crime is it, what Richie Incognito and the others did against Jonathan Martin? How serious is it? Do you line up on the side of Jonathan Martin saying that's over the top, can't do that? Or do you line up on the other side and say it's a football locker room, they're young men, that's part of the culture? I get that argument. I see that argument. I think it's a matter of degree, to my mind. You can't go where they went. You can't push it that far. And a player who is subject to that sort of abuse should have the right and the ability, which Martin had and didn't exercise, but the ability to say, enough, that's enough, I don't want any more. I don't know why Jonathan Martin would not have said that. Clearly, the report, from what I've read, I haven't read it all, but clearly the report indicates that although Martin did not bring the behavior on himself, he certainly didn't stick up for himself. You know, the report says that Martin was subjected to bullying in high school, which led to depression and issues with self-esteem. Martin admitted he contemplated suicide in 2013. The report says, although Incognito, Jerry and Pouncey verbally harassed Martin, we find that they did not intend to drive him from the team or cause him lasting emotional injury. They crossed the line. They pushed too far. That's true. They did. They should be stopped from doing that, prevented from doing that. But I don't think the penalty should go much beyond that. And in a larger sense, I think we should have a dialogue about acceptable locker room behavior. I would not be surprised if that's where the NFL goes with this. If the NFL says, we're going to have seminars, we're going to have speakers, we're going to have to educate our players as to what's acceptable and what's not. What is beyond teasing? What is beyond good-natured ribbing in the locker room? And why wait to start it in the NFL? Start it in high school. Start it in college. It's just an educational process. It is not dissimilar to the Michael Sam situation from earlier this week. I mean, what a week, oh, by the way, it's been for the NFL. Michael Sam announcing on Monday, an NFL draft prospect, that he's gay, coming out publicly saying that he's gay. And for the most part, most of the NFL world issued a great big shrug, like, okay, whatever. I think it's got to happen that way, too, in this case. It's got to happen where, you know, it's no longer acceptable for bullying to take place, for that kind of behavior to be allowed to go on in locker rooms, just as it would not be acceptable for people to harass gay teammates in the locker room. Not acceptable. Can't do it. But I don't know if there's a penalty to be paid. I'd like to hear what you think about that. And you don't have to take sides. I don't think it's as simple as that. I'm with Incognito. I'm with Jonathan Martin. In fact, I think it's much more complicated than that. I think it's much more nuanced than that. You don't have to take a side. He was right. He was wrong. Martin was right. Incognito was wrong. You don't have to do that. And I don't think that's instructive. What's more instructive, I think, is where you think the line is and how do we define where the line is for acceptable and unacceptable locker room behavior. I think we're getting a sense of it now. I think the NFL is probably going to get to work on establishing guidelines, instructing players. You know, they have all sorts, when they come into the league, and they have all sorts of role-playing exercises. This is what you do in this case. This is what you do in that case. I think something like that is going to be very valuable here, training, education, examples, showing players, both rookies coming in and people who've been in the league for a while, showing them exactly how they think, you know, what they think is acceptable and what's not. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 803-0550 is the number. The phone lines are open. If you're outside Buffalo, the toll-free number is 1-888-552-550. You can always reach us and follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. Where is the line for locker room harassment? Richie Incognito and company clearly crossed it. Where is the line for that, and how do you get that to stop in the future? Ring us up. Let us know what you think. 803-0550 is the number to call. You heard the lineup. Scott Kazmer, a Football Outsider, scheduled to join us tonight at 8 o'clock. He thinks offensive tackle is the biggest hole the Bills have to fill on their roster this offseason. And coming up at 8:30, as we get set for the Combine next week, at 8:30, we're going to talk with Rob Rang from CBS Sports Draft Insider, get his thoughts on the draft itself and the prospects will be at the Combine next week. Give us a call now on the Richie Incognito, Jonathan Martin situation. 803-0550 is the number to call, or outside Buffalo toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Here's Joe in Tonawanda. Hi, Joe. You're on the air.
Hey, John. How you doing?
Doing great. Thanks.
My opinion on this is I'm not defending Incognito at all. I really don't like the guy. But I feel that it's a little bit of both of their faults. I feel that Jonathan Martin allowed the behavior to go on probably for a little bit longer than he should have. If he was uncomfortable with the way he was being spoken to, he should have said something right off the bat. And I don't think that that happened in this case. I think that in this case, he shrugged it off, laughed it off, joked back a little bit. And then once he felt it got too much, he put his foot down and that was the end of it.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with you there, as a matter of fact, Joe. I think he had to push back a little bit. I mean, think of the world in which we're talking about here, a world in the NFL where guys routinely push back when they get pushed, where guys are expected in a physical sense to retaliate when they absorb a blow, a hit from somebody. And I think it would have helped Jonathan Martin if he had it in him, and clearly he didn't, to push back, to say to Richie, and I don't mean physically, I mean verbally, say, no, Richie, knock it off. Stop it. Secondarily, and I think you may be saying this too, it's incumbent on Jonathan Martin to go to his coach or coaches or somebody in position of power and say, hey, you got to help me out with this. This has gone too far. And there's no evidence that he did that. Instead, he walked away from the team, contacted his attorney and his agent, and handled it that way. Now, Incognito and company were wrong. Don't get me wrong on that. They were absolutely wrong in pushing that hard and pushing that far in some of the comments they made. But Jonathan Martin, I think it's incumbent on him to take care of himself in some sense, and he did not do that. It went on too long. A lot of people, and this was a familiar thought when, I guess a common theme when the issue first came up back in early November. A lot of people thought that there was something wrong with the culture of the Miami Dolphins that allowed that to happen. And that's interesting. And I don't know. Who knows who the locker room leaders were? Joe Philbin, the head coach, bore the brunt of some criticism from that. I'm sure they have captains and people in positions of leadership on the roster. And I don't know the inside of that Dolphins locker room, so I don't know if there was somebody who, could have headed that off at the pass. They didn't. It went too far. But that's something to look at. And as actually, if I have time, I'll look deeper into the report, the 144-page report, and see if that issue is mentioned at all. Because there is, I think, something to be said for internal leadership, for a culture in the locker room where, people look out for each other. Like, hey, knock it off. Don't push him that far. Give us a call. Let us know what you think about Richie Incognito and Jonathan Martin. The phone line's open, 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-552-550. Shawnee in Buffalo. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
Great. Just had a couple comments. I understand what you guys are saying, that perhaps Jonathan Martin could have, perhaps stood up for himself better. But, to me that's synonymous to, blaming the victim of sexual harassment in the workplace for not coming forward. You have to look at what repercussions he might have thought he would have gotten had he spoke up and said something. So, yes, he could have better defended himself, but I just, find it a little disgusting that people seem to be taking up for Incognito. I mean, good-natured ribbing in the locker room is one thing, but if this kind of harassment and abuse and especially the racial slurs aspect of this had happened in another form of a workplace, in a business environment, it would be a lawsuit. So I don't think it could be excused just because it's football. So that's my comment.
Okay, thanks. Good comment, too. Something to think about. I'm not excusing it, by the way. not excusing it at all, but it is a different type of workplace. It is a different type of work than any of us are accustomed to. You know, it's a very confrontational type of business where on a weekly and, you know, game day and daily basis in practice, people confront each other and try to impose their will on each other. It is different than what most of us are used to. That does not excuse racial remarks, inappropriate remarks, even crude remarks from Incognito. He was way out of bounds on that. But, and I'm not blaming the victim, but I do think Jonathan Martin should have stood up for himself. Should have said, enough, stop. Should have enlisted the help of some other teammates. Even if he had to go outside the offensive line unit. Should have enlisted the help of a coach, his position coach, or maybe a head coach. And clearly he felt like, and this might go to the issue I mentioned a minute ago, he didn't have much support in terms of a culture in the locker room to prevent that. Clearly he felt like there was no place to go, and he had to do what he did, leave the roster, contemplate suicide, as a matter of fact. But I think it is incumbent on him, in the face of this inappropriate behavior, to stick up for himself. I just think it is. Here is Bernie on the 400. Hello, Bernie. You're on the air.
Hey, John. Yeah, my feeling is, you know, we have zero tolerances for the rest of us in the workplace. And we have repercussions in it. If, you know, something happens, whether it's sexual harassment or whatever, and it, we usually lose our job because of the zero tolerances. I don't know why the NFL is any different. I feel as though, you know, just like kids in school, when somebody's bullied and that, there's repercussions for the people that are bullied. A lot of times these kids don't come out and say things and that until it's too late, until they commit suicide. And I feel as though, you know, with Incognito and that, there's repercussions that he should face, not just a slap on the hand and say, don't do it again. I mean, you know, whether or not you're a kid in grade school or high school or, you know, college, you know, you fear things that are going to happen to you, so you don't say anything, and you end up walking away or putting your head in a hole or killing yourself. And I feel as though that just because it's the NFL and these guys are studs and everything else and, you know, it's, you know, acceptable, I feel as though that there should be repercussions for him.
Bernie, doesn't it make a difference that these are not kids, that these are grown men, adults that we're talking about? Doesn't that make a difference?
In a sense, it does. But even with the guy that was being bullied, I mean, he had that through his whole life, and he kept it to himself.
Yep.
And in this situation, and that, I feel as though, just like with a young kid, and that, you know, you get bullied enough and that, you know, you don't know how to defend yourself. I mean, that's what bullying is. You're picking on somebody that doesn't know how to defend themselves. So what they do is, you know, they walk away from it. And whether or not, you know, as you grow up, if you have this bullying throughout your life, I mean, it's hard to know when to stand up for yourself and say stop. So in his case, and that he walked away and got himself a lawyer. I don't, you know, I mean, he might have been able to do it a different way, but, you know, why confront somebody and have more repercussions come against
you? All right. I see your point. I don't necessarily agree with it, Bernie. Thanks for calling. There's one thing about, and this is might not be a popular sentiment, one thing about this and about pro football in general, I think, that occurred to me today when I heard about this. In pro football, players are encouraged to fight through adversity. Players are encouraged to push back when they get pushed down. Players are encouraged to handle tough situations and work through them, to play through injury, to play through pain, to get tough and you know, be able to withstand a number of things, physical pain, emotional pain, hard work, abuse from fans, verbal abuse from fans as they're going to the field or coming off the field. I mean, that's part of the deal, I think, is, and that's part of what many of us celebrate when it comes to pro football, that toughness, that resilience, that ability to push through adversity. And in this case, and again, make no mistake, Incognito was wrong. He was dead wrong, and his cohorts there, dead wrong. But in this case, Jonathan Martin is being told, you don't have to push back. You don't have to fight back. We'll take care of it. I think it's, right or wrong, I think it's inconsistent with kind of the ethos of the pro football world. and I don't know where that would take us. Let's go to Michael in Toronto. Hello, Michael.
I love your show.
Thank you.
Listen, I agree with you 100%. It's football. I can't believe this has got so much attention as it's got. I mean, yes, all right, Incognito was wrong with what he said and all the things he texted and that, but Martin's got to be tougher than all this. It's like ridiculous. I can't believe it's getting the press that it's getting. I mean, this is football. I agree with what you just said. This is like the ultimate tough guy sport, and you got to be tough physically and mentally. And he showed that he wasn't being tough.
That's kind of the way I'm coming down on it, Michael. It is a very tough sport, and it's not just physically tough, mentally tough, being able to work hard for long periods of time, being able to, absorb a workload, being able to, being forced to compete for your job on a daily, weekly, if not daily basis, knowing that they're bringing in guys on Tuesday who are trying out and trying to take your job. I mean, that's mental stress. That's mental strain. Where does this lead if we protect the weak of mind moving forward? Where does it lead? All of a sudden, well, we won't bring in guys on Tuesday because it might hurt the other players' feelings. I mean, what are we talking about here? And again, I'm going to repeat it over and over because I don't want to be misunderstood. Incognito and his teammates, Pouncey and John Jerry, were wrong, dead wrong, pushed it too far. They should be punished. They were punished in Incognito's case. You know, he missed half the season. They're wrong. But I just don't know the degree to which they need to be punished. And if anything, I think this should result in a situation where the league starts an educational series to let people know, let players know what's acceptable and what's not. This clearly was not acceptable. A call here from Colin. Hello, Colin. You're on the show. Good evening.
Hey, John. Happy Valentine's Day.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks. The thing that really bugs me about the whole situation is that football is like a team sport. And three out of the four other linemen were ganging up on him. Mm-hmm. And that, adds a whole other dynamic to it. I mean, when all your teammates are telling, whatever they were saying to him, he probably thought they were right.
Yeah, it's a really good point, Colin, and I had not considered that. That's a really good point. He clearly, Incognito, felt he had nowhere to go. I mean, he walked away from the team. I'm trying to find the quote. He told his agent, his lawyer, that he had to go. I mean, he kind of said something like that he had no place to go and no place to turn. When those teammates, not just Incognito, but the other two offensive linemen, and, those guys, I'm sure, they considered themselves close-knit at that time. I'm sure he felt like he had lost everybody. He probably didn't have anywhere to turn on the team. You're right. That's a good point.
All right. Thanks, John.
Thanks for calling. All right, we're going to take a break, come back with more. We'll talk more about this. We want to turn our attention to the draft as well with some comments from Mel Kiper Jr. about some of the prospects who will be at the Combine in Indianapolis. But if you've got thoughts on this Richie Incognito, Jonathan Martin situation, the report is out today, the Ted Wells report. We'll take your phone calls, your thoughts on it. 803-0550 is the number. Toll-free 1-888-550-2550. You can follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. The caller from Toronto a minute ago, and this kind of echoes what I think. They're praised for being tough. They're taught to be tough. And in this case, Jonathan Martin was anything but. Now, the behavior by Incognito and his teammates, way over the line. But I don't know if it's as big a deal as it might be being played out to be. We'll take a break and come back with more of the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Live tonight from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Welcome back. We're here until 9 o'clock tonight, and the phone lines remain open. Anything you'd like to talk about, we'll take your calls. 803-0550, the number, or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Coming up a little bit later on, 8 o'clock tonight, Scott Kasmer of FootballOutsiders.com. He says, after reviewing the Buffalo Bills roster, offensive tackle is the biggest hole remaining on the Buffalo Bills roster. We'll talk with him about that. Coming up at 8:30 tonight, we're going to talk about next week's Combine with Rob Rang from CBSSports.com and NFL DraftInsider.com. We're going to the Combine. Did you know that? Wednesday, Thursday, Friday next week. We'll be there with live radio shows from Indianapolis next week from the NFL Scouting Combine. Chris Brown and I will be there with coverage on our website, BuffaloBills.com, and all sorts of coverage that you can get only from us at BuffaloBills.com and on the radio show next Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. That's when our coverage of the NFL Combine begins. We started out tonight, and we can continue on if you'd like, talking about the Richie Incognito, Jonathan Martin story. The Dolphins offensive lineman Jonathan Martin subjected to a pattern of harassment, according to the report released today by NFL investigator Ted Wells. What do you think of that? How serious is it? Richie Incognito has paid a pretty steep price already. He's been out for half a season. He is not going back to Miami. The Dolphins have made that clear. And it's almost fairly likely that he won't get a job anywhere else in the NFL. Is that enough? Should there be further penalties? And what is the line? How far can you push in an NFL locker room when it comes to harassment? Clearly, Richie Incognito crossed the line, along with his teammates, apparently, John Jerry and Mike Pouncey, crossed the line badly when they were dealing with Jonathan Martin. But how far can you go? Where's the line? And what will it lead to in the future? How much do we have to protect behavior in the locker room? How much do we have to protect the players in the locker room from insults and, ridicule? And I don't know. I have a hard time defining exactly where the line is. I know that these guys cross the line, but I have a hard time defining where it is. Maybe you can help. Phone line's open, 803-0550, the number, or toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. As you just heard, Bills head coach Doug Marrone, a guest on WGR, our flagship station, earlier today. One of the issues that came up was Kevin Cobb, the Bills quarterback, who got a two-year deal last March, but they don't know if he's going to come back. When he was asked about Kevin Cobb, who suffered that concussion in preseason last year, Doug Marrone said, quote, he's under contract, and I'm not aware of really what exactly is going on now, whether he's planning to come back, whether he's not going to come back. Marrone said, I have not been informed of anything as to that nature. Yeah, as you know, Kevin Cobb had the concussion, suffered last August, put him on injured reserve for the rest of the year. The Bills have a $1 million roster bonus due Kevin Cobb early next month in March, so you would think that that is going to play into this as well. Other topics discussed by the head coach in his appearance on the Howard Simon Show this morning in Buffalo. Doug Marrone has just completed finishing off his coaching staff, hiring a couple of coaches on the defensive side of the ball and a couple on the offensive side of the ball. Marrone was asked if coaching chemistry is just important as player chemistry and how he thinks this coaching staff is going to work together.
Well, I think it's the same thing. You know, you look to build that chemistry and bringing in the right guys, you know, that you feel are going to fit with what you're trying to get out of the players and what you're trying to get together as a staff. And it starts with the staff, because the players, if there's any problems on the staff or anything like that, the players see right through that, no different than we see problems on the team. So it's been very important. And when you look at the staff, it's really there are a lot of connections on it. You know, when you start to look at it, you know, people who know people that have known them before or have worked with them. So it's been a very smooth transition, and we've been able to hit the ground running.
Head coach Doug Marrone, the coach is in place this week, getting to know each other, getting to know how they're going to work together, what the job duties will be. Also getting set for the draft and the combine next week. And in his appearance this morning on the Howard Simon Show, Coach Marrone talked about the role of the coaching staff this year as they look at the draft prospects and do their reports and figure out who they want to talk to next week in Indianapolis.
To give people a good understanding of what's going on right now with the coaches is, you know, we really spend maybe half to three quarters of our day working on our football team, doing studies, watching what we've done, watching the players, you know, writing things that we have to improve on. Mm-hmm. We look at other people in the league, you know, that are doing things well to see if it fits into what we're doing. And that goes on really for three quarters of the day. And then the other quarter of the day to half of the day goes to college, you know, where we'll fill out reports just like we were an area scout. And we'll fill out those reports and we'll hand them in to our scouting department. And then when we get together, as we, you know, draw closer to the draft, then we'll get a chance to read those reports. And again, we're just part of a large process.
Doug Marrone talking about how his coaching staff is spending its time. Many new members of the coaching staff, as we mentioned a moment ago, they've got to acclimate themselves as to what went on during the 2013 season. And Marrone says that's part of what they're doing right now, reviewing last season, figuring out what went well, what did not go so well, and how they make changes moving forward.
Well, I think absolutely. I think that, you know, we've sat down. I think it's very easy for anyone on the outside to say, hey, this is what they did poorly, you know, just from the statistics. So, you know, that's not as hard to identify. How to fix those problems and how to rectify it is the challenge. And, you know, and that's what we've been working on. And what we'll do is when the players come back, you know, we'll talk to them about here's what we see, you know, here's what our issues were, these were the challenges. Here's what we're doing going forward. Here's how we're going to get better. Here's how we're going to get to our goal.
Head Coach Doug Marrone this morning on the radio with Howard Simon on our flagship WGR Sports Radio 550. They talked a lot about some of last year's issues, including struggles in the red zone, scoring touchdowns down inside the opponent's 20-yard line. And that, of course, leads to a discussion of what the Bills might need, maybe a big target for the red zone. Coach Marrone talked about that. Did the Bills look at other teams around the league and see what they do, especially those that have pretty good targets down in the red zone?
You'll look at some teams and you look at the top red zone teams, and some of them do have, you know, big targets, whether it's a tight end, whether it's a large receiver. Some of them do a good job of just concepts. Some people run the ball well. So, you know, there's a lot of different things. We just have to look at what we have now. And that's what I've told. That's what we do as coaches. We don't look to say, hey, if we get this guy, this is what we'll do. Right now, we're working on getting better with the players we have on this team that are coming back under contract. And as we add players, whether it be via unrestricted free agents or the college draft, then we'll look at their talents and plug them in and evaluate it again.
We mentioned earlier what Marrone's comments were on Kevin Cobb. He said he is not aware of what is going on, whether he's planning on coming back. It would seem the ball might be in Kevin Cobb's court. And again, Kevin Cobb has a $1 million roster bonus due next month. If they release Kevin Cobb, they would save $3.1 million against the cap. The Bills, and Marrone said, talking about and looking at the players they have on the roster, they finished last season with these quarterbacks on the roster: E.J. Manuel, Thad Lewis, Jeff Toole, and Dennis Dixon was on the practice squad. Marrone was asked if he's okay with that current group going into the next season, being the quarterback room for next season.
Well, I think what we did was we set ourselves up, we can go any direction, meaning coaching staff-wise. So we brought in a quarterback coach. I have a senior advisor in Jim Hostler. You know, I basically have, you know, three coaches on this staff now that have coached that position and coached that quarterback. Two haven't coordinated here in the NFL. So I've set it up that we have the ability to go either way.
Head Coach Doug Marrone appearing this morning on the Howard Simon Show on our flagship in Buffalo, WGR Sports Radio 550. Kind of a quiet day other than the Incognito Martin story around the NFL. The news came out today about Roger Goodell making some serious money. I mean, really big money. The NFL paid Commissioner Roger Goodell $44.2 million in the 12-month period that ended March 31st, 2013. $44.2 million for the year. Whew, that includes $9 million of deferred pension and bonus earned the previous year. The league will file its tax return, which includes the pay figures, with the IRS Tuesday. They'll show that Roger Goodell, the commissioner, earned $3.5 million in salary and a bonus of $40.36 million, though $5 million was earned the prior year. That's a lot of money, $44 million for Roger Goodell. The Congress has brought up Goodell's pay as part of its attacks on the league's nonprofit status. Before the labor deal in 2011, the new CBA, the most he ever made was $11.5 million. Now he's up to $44 million. By far, he is the highest-paid sports executive. Major League Baseball's Bud Selig, when he signed his latest contract in 2012, ESPN reported the final year would pay him $22 million, although some reports say he'll make $30 million, but $44 million for NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell. Amazing. The league is making money, folks. Around the league, the Vikings say that Christian Ponder will be back to play some quarterback for them next year. GM Rick Spielman of the Vikings says he plans to keep Ponder in Minnesota. He'll be there next year, but he said he's got to add a couple of other quarterbacks, including a young quarterback. It appeared for a while that Christian Ponder might be on his way out of Minnesota after a rough third season. He had some injuries. The new offensive coordinator in Minnesota, North Turner, likes Ponder, but he doesn't seem to fit the type of deep pass, vertical stretch game that North Turner employs. Ponder, more of a West Coast-style quarterback. But the Vikings say they'll bring him back next year. And speaking of quarterbacks, Johnny Manziel says he really wants to be the first overall pick. He really wants to play for the Houston Texans. He told John McClain of the Houston Chronicle that, quote, the Texans would be making the worst decision they've ever made if they pass on him with the first overall pick in the draft. He could go third to Jacksonville if they pass on Tim. Manziel said, if the Texans did that, they'd, quote, turn that chip on my shoulder from a Frito into a Dorito. Not quite sure what that means. Manziel says he wants to lead the team he grew up watching. He wants to play in Texas. He went on to say, quote, I'm going to put myself in position to win the Super Bowl every single year. Russell Wilson, another 5'10 guy, won the Super Bowl in his second year. I want to be the first rookie to win the Super Bowl. Manziel thinks he absolutely can do that under new coach Bill O'Brien and the Houston Texans. Pretty cocky, that Johnny Manziel. Pretty good quarterback. wants to be the first overall pick by Houston. We'll take a break. If you've got more thoughts on the Bills or the Richie Incognito situation, we'll get to your calls in a moment. When we return, it is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Coming up next hour, we're going to talk with Scott Kazmur of footballoutsiders.com about what the Bills need personnel-wise. And then we're going to talk with Rob Rang at 8:30 next hour about how they can get it in the Combine next week. We're going to the Combine next week. Have we mentioned that? Phone lines are open if you have a comment or question tonight, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. We can talk about Incognito and Martin. We can talk about the Bills, your choice. We'll go here to Mark in Jersey City, the home of the Super Bowl, Mark. Is the Super Bowl fever quieted down in Jersey City?
Oh yeah, definitely. I think everybody around here was just kind of glad it got over with just all the hullabaloo.
Yeah, it's a great place. I like Jersey City. The Bills stay there when they play in MetLife Stadium now. Did you know that?
Yeah, I think it's down by the water,
yes.
Down in Newport.
Exactly, yep.
They had both teams down there. But anyway, as it relates to the Bills, I think the tight end is probably the most needy position. You know, Chandler's free agency, Moyaki, and kind of a guy they just want to look at. I think there's not really much else there. And Marone talks about matchups and creating mismatches, and the tight end is kind of the bell cow for that, seems like, in the NFL. And I had a question about the renovations. I read that the Bills are getting new locker rooms and weight room. I was wondering if you had any info on that, what they would look like or what upgrades they're getting.
No, I know that. In fact, I think they've torn apart the locker room here in the complex. I don't know if you know the layout here. We are across the parking lot from the stadium. So the stadium locker room remains intact, at least for now. But the locker room here in the training complex is undergoing a major renovation. I haven't seen any like artist rendering or anything. I'm sure it'll be spruced up a little bit. It's, to be honest, the locker room here in the training complex is sort of Spartan. It's bare bones, and I think they need to make it bigger, number one, and they need to make it nicer, I think, especially when you get to the part about attracting free agents and the weight room itself. That I believe is underway, the expansion of the weight room. They're digging into the parking lot right outside the weight room now to expand that room. So this is a major construction zone going on right here. We should get we'll get somebody on the show in the next couple of weeks or so to kind of go through all of the changes and give us an update on the construction. The question for you, Mark, about tight ends, Eric Ebron of North Carolina, the number one. But if they were able to strike a deal with Scott Chandler, would you consider tight end again the place for the biggest upgrade that they need?
No, I don't think so. If you're able, Chandler had good production last year. He's a good guy. Everything I read in the locker room, if they re-upped him, they could get somebody later on in the draft. It's a pretty deep draft, so I'm sure they could find or even further develop a guy like Greg or maybe Moyaki is able to stay healthy.
Yeah, I think they do want to see some more of Moyaki, at least going to the OTAs and training camp. See what they have there. I think they like what they might have there in terms of a pass catching tight end. I think if they find the right number with Scott Chandler, they could probably keep him around. And I guess I'm of the opinion, I don't know, you'd have to me, you got to be a really, really special tight end to be a first round tight end. And I know Ebron of North Carolina is pretty good. I don't know if he is a special tight end that would warrant, a top 10 pick like the Bills are at number 9. So I'd be hesitant to look at him as a first-round draft pick for the Bills. And I don't know if there's anybody after him in the tight end group that warrants first-round grade or first-round consideration. Maybe, but we're going to look, we'll take a look at the tight ends next week when we're down at the Combine in Indy and see what they look like, see what people are saying about them. But I don't get excited about tight ends. Is that bad to say? Unless you got Jimmy Graham or a healthy Rob Gronkowski, I don't look at tight ends for the most part as being major difference makers. Major difference makers. I think you can do pretty well with Scott Chandler, say, and have Moyaki come in on some downs and act as like sort of a H-back tight end guy. And then if you want to keep Lee Smith, then you have him come in as the extra blocking tight end. I think you can do pretty well with a combination of those three. You don't have to invest a lot of money in any of those three. That'd be the way I just think with other issues, including offensive line and a big wide receiver, maybe a run plugging inside linebacker, I might address that before I got around to tight end, especially when it doesn't appear that there's a tight end out there who jumps off the page as a must-have first half of the first round type of tight end. Let's see. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back for one more hour to go, and we'll have time to take more phone calls. If you've got thoughts on the Bills or the NFL, the Richie Incognito, Jonathan Martin situation, phone lines open, 803-0550, the number when we come back. Toll-free, 1-888-550-2550, or you can reach us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. Your thoughts on anything at all regarding the Bills or the NFL. We're going to talk a little bit about the draft and a little bit about the Bills' needs in the draft when we return. It's the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And this crowd is on its feet, and it is pandemonium. And that's only the half of it.
He's got Goodwin open in the end zone. Touchdown! Touchdown! Flash Goodwin!
I like this kind of party, baby!
Halftime is over. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
You can't stop C.J. Spiller. You can't stop him. How did he do it? How did he do it?
Let's go sometime.
Hey, hold hands. Let's go. Check it out.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across Western New York.
Everybody's on their feet in the stands. This crowd is absolutely whipped into a frenzy.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Hour two of the show, we're going to talk about the combine a little bit later on with Rob Rang of NFL Draft Scout Report. Rob Rang will join us a little bit later on this hour. We get set for the combine coming up next week. We'll be there next Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And as you get set for the combine, as you work into the offseason, you start to think, what does my team need? What is the biggest weakness? What is the glaring need for my team? Well, the analytics folks at Football Outsider have an answer for that. Scott Kazmer joins us. He is the NFL writer, assistant editor of footballoutsiders.com. Scott, thank you very much for coming on the air with us tonight. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You've done a pretty exhaustive study of the Buffalo Bills roster. Before we get to what the Bills need, what do you think of the Bills roster? How are they suited personnel-wise this offseason?
Yeah, I mean, for a team that was only 6-10, I was pretty surprised to go through their units to, you know, looking for a glaring hole. And, yeah, there's some positions that fans may not be pleased with the performance so far, but in terms of the asset used to, you know, acquire that position, yeah, you have to give it time. I mean, E.J. Manuel is just a rookie quarterback. They have some young receivers. You know, they have two young players in the secondary, Stephon Gilmore. You know, Aaron Williams, you know, they have the defensive line that they constructed, put a lot of time and money into, is starting to pay off with the pairing of Kyle Williams, Mario Williams, Marcell Dareus. You know, it's really coming together, and, you know, you just have to, you know, put better pieces around, your star players and hopefully coach the young players into becoming, reaching their full potential.
Scott, you're right that adding talent around the quarterback should be the top priority, but that does not have to be a big-name receiver. You think the Bills are set with receivers?
Yeah, I mean, Stevie Johnson, you know, he's a favorite of Football Outsiders for his recent play, but, you know, 2013 was not the kind of season anyone expected from him. But, you know, I look at Robert Woods, I think, could be a good player. Marquise Goodwin, I think he only had about 17 catches, but, you know, he had the longest play of the season in the passing game for Buffalo, 59-yard touchdown, unbelievable separation and speed against Kansas City. You know, you like to see more of that, more of him getting involved. And obviously, you know, C.J. Spiller and Fred Jackson provide a good running back duo. So, you know, I think tight end could be something they could look at upgrading. I know, disrespect to Scott Chandler, but, you know, in 2013, you kind of need a better player to lead your team in reception and receiving yards than Scott Chandler. And, you know, I don't think number 9 pick in the draft, I don't think tight end's going to be a good option there, but, you know, certainly second, third round for that position.
And you don't see any glaring holes on the defensive side of the ball for the Bills?
Well, again, we talked about the defensive line coming through. Linebackers, you know, they were able to add Kiko Alonso, kind of having an impact similar to Luke Kuechly in Carolina. Maybe another linebacker couldn't be added. And again, young pieces in the secondary, obviously Jairus Byrd, They have to find a way to either franchise tag him again, get a long-term deal, fill that position up. Could have a little hole of safety there. But, I mean, really, it's a good roster. Just, again, same old story for Buffalo. Seems like you're always looking for the quarterback to, you know, step up in that position.
And that requires some patience, I guess, right? Who knows out where E.J. Manuel is going to wind up. But do you agree that, like most people, think it's too soon to make a decision on what kind of quarterback E.J. Manuel might be?
Yeah, I mean, I think the injuries really took away from what we could glean from his rookie season. And you know, if you look back, he kind of peaked in week two against Carolina. That's probably the best defense he played all year, and he's had a career high in passing yards, almost 300. Led a great game-winning drive at the end of the game. Yeah, that was probably his best game of the season. It was only week two. So we didn't really get to see you know, what he can all do. And you know, to me, I think you have to see more deep passing. He only had 7 completions on passes around 20-plus yards. You know, Geno Smith had 3 times that many as a rookie with New York. You know, a lot of dink and dunk in Buffalo. But, again, it comes back to offensive line. You know, quarterback has to have time to throw, or you know, you're not going to be able to complete those deep balls, such as Miami Dolphins found out all too well with their Mike Wallace experiment.
We're live on the line with Scott Kazmur. He is NFL analyst, assistant editor of the Football Outsiders website, which deals with analytics. They call themselves Football Outsiders, innovative statistics, intelligent analysis. And the key stat that you have is DVOA. What is DVOA? How is that calculated? What does that mean, Scott?
Yeah, it's defensive value over average, DVOA. Basically, you know, it's going to look at every play in the game, both sides of the ball. It's going to compare it to the league average, how teams do in different situations. Now, obviously, a 3-yard run on 2nd and 1 is more valuable than a 3-yard run on 3rd and 10. You know, it's just going to account for the opponent faced, the situation, and, you know, the black box formula to come up with it all. I couldn't even begin to calculate it for you, chalkboard or not. But, yeah, I mean, it's our proprietary formula. It's been around for about a decade now, and yeah, that's what we roll with.
Well, Scott, in the DVOA, there's some interesting stats that you come up with. Scott wrote a piece on footballoutsiders.com that says the Buffalo Bills' biggest hole is at offensive tackle. And as a way of illustrating that, you know, I think most Bills fans know the Bills were 10th in the league in rushing yardage, but they were only 14th in yards per carry and 17th in DVOA. What does that mean? 17th in the running game in DVOA?
Yeah, just, you know, about league average, you know, 32 teams, 17th, not very good. And again, Buffalo, they ran the ball more than any team in the league last year. It's not something you expect from a 6-10 team. So, you know, there's definitely a run-heavy scheme in Doug Marone's first year. And if you want to get more successful at running, then obviously it's going to start with your guys up front being able to block and open up holes. And, you know, running back like C.J. Spiller, if he gets a little hole, obviously he has world-class talent to, you know, make a big run out of it. And, you know, we just didn't see too much of that in 2013.
And your analysis showed that the Bills particularly struggled running to the outside. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, we're still collecting our game charting, but, you know, Eric Pierce, the right tackle, he was responsible for a higher number of blown blocks that led to negative runs or sacks or pressure on the quarterback. Yeah, rushing outside was something they very rarely tried because, you know, they just weren't successful. That's why, you know, 71% of their runs came right up the middle or guard, the highest rate in the league.
That's more than 2/3 of their runs came right at the middle or over the guard. And teams will scheme for that, right? I mean, they see what's happening, the Bills' opponents.
Right. I mean, you can watch it on tape and chart it every week. And, you know, it starts to become more predictable. And like I said, when you mix it in with a passing game that didn't stretch the field very often, yeah, it's kind of a limited offense.
Talk about what you think of the offensive line when it comes to pass protection and what the Football Outsiders numbers show there, Scott.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't that the quarterback was under pressure a ton, but, you know, when he was, the sacks usually happen. You know, that's going to happen with a young quarterback who can't handle the blitz as well, not as mature in his progressions. But, you know, that's something that's just going to get better with time, I think. And yeah, Cordy Glenn was a high draft pick 2 years ago. Obviously, Bills have something invested in him. I think the right tackle is more likely to where they could replace a starter. They've gotten some good pieces from Pittsburgh. That's where I'm from. They didn't see Craig Arbick do anything in Pittsburgh, and he goes to Buffalo and has a pretty good player. And Doug Legursky, I always thought, was pretty good when he had to replace Marquise Pouncey. So they've been able to use players like that and get very cheap value and able to start them. But I just think if you look at the offense and the pieces around them and the age, the offensive line's really the position where they could put more value into in the draft.
You know, we were played portions of an interview that head coach Doug Marrone did earlier today, Scott, and he talked about what his coaching staff is doing right now. It sounds like the sort of statistical analysis that you guys do is fairly similar to what the Bills coaching staff is doing. Is even the new coaches look at the cut-ups of last year and try to figure out what went on last year, what went well, what didn't do so well. Do you think that's what most coaching staffs in the league are up to right now?
Yeah, I think about two-thirds of the league has an analytics department, dedicated solely to doing this kind of stuff, watching the film. Personally, I like to take a game, get a download of a game, and just kind of frame-by-frame analysis instead of just watching on replay. Just kind of move things slowly at your own speed just to see, what's happening on each play, who's getting beat, who's making their right plays. Obviously, we don't make any assumptions that we know what the play design is, but just go on a results-based analysis of what happened to see who's at fault, and that's how you end up with stats like, Eric Pears allowed, 18 pass pressures or what have you. And, we calculate all those stats in the off season.
Well, on the line with Scott Kasmer of FootballOutsiders.com. He's written a piece that says the Bills' biggest hole is at offensive tackle moving forward into the offseason. I wonder, you said how many teams use analytics, Scott, you think?
Low 20s.
Why wouldn't teams avail themselves of this sort of information? Do they do it, just on their own in-house, or why wouldn't a team want to look at these numbers?
Yeah, I have no idea. The Steelers are one team that's kind of been adamantly against it. They just have these traditional, they have these ideas of what worked back in the 70s will work today, and it kind of gives you an idea how I feel about the whole thing. I think in this era when information is more easy to come up with, we're able to watch every game now. We have access to coaches' film now as fans. Service like Game Rewind. We have HD, you have tablets. People could watch games anywhere, really. That's really changed with technology, and I think it'd be crazy not to come up with the tendencies. And I'm glad, the Super Bowl was a horrible game, but you listen to the Seahawks talk about, 2 weeks of study and how they picked up on so many tendencies of, one of the greatest offenses in history and were able to shut it down. I think teams are putting the analytics to use.
Do you think, Scott, that fans having access to coaches' film, all 22, do you think that's changed the way that at least hardcore fans approach the game or maybe analyze games, watch games?
Yeah, I think it's a good thing, but it can be dangerous. I think when people start looking, the quarterback missed this open receiver, that open receiver, I think I could get into dangerous territory where, a lot of plays have a primary read and, the ball wants to go to a certain player and, sometimes, you're not always mixing the right angle. The quarterback could have been under pressure, and that's why he never was able to get to the receiver on the right side of the field. So I think, you have to be smart about it. You don't want to blame people too harshly for what you're seeing. Just watch the games fairly and just go on what you actually know and don't make assumptions.
Scott Kasmer, our guest, he has written a post for Football Outsiders that says offensive tackle is the biggest personnel hole the Bills have to fill this offseason, which, Scott, might be good news. There appear to be some very good offensive tackles that could be available in the first third of the draft on May 8th.
Yeah, you have one from Matthews from Texas A&M. Everyone's doing their mock drafts now in February, and things change. I remember doing a piece last year about Geno Smith being the number one pick at quarterback for the Chiefs, and he ends up falling to the 30s. So, there's a lot that can happen, but there's definitely a lot of offensive tackle quality in this draft.
So it may work out for the Bills. Scott, we thank you very much for coming on the show tonight. Tell me, last thing, how can fans use the website Football Outsiders? What would fans get the most value out of from footballoutsiders.com?
Yeah, we have weekly articles, and talking about this summer, or in July, we'll have our new book come out. You can download PDF also. We will go through a preview for every team for 2014. I'll probably be writing the Buffalo chapter, the Football Outsiders Almanac 2014. It's getting more popular each year, and you know, look forward to writing this for the first time.
All right, Scott, thanks very much. Thanks for being with us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Scott Kasmer, NFL writer, assistant editor for footballoutsiders.com. That's the website. You can look at his post about the Buffalo Bills' biggest hole, offensive tackle. That's what he thinks. You may think differently. Some people think tight end. Some people think wide receiver. I think it's one of those three. I do anyway. Their biggest need, offensive tackle, wide receiver. And then I'd put linebacker, and then I'd put tight end. Let us know what you think. Phone lines are open, 803-0550 or toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. Let's take a call from Butch on the east side. Butch, we haven't heard from you in a while. How are you tonight?
Hi, John. Thanks so much for taking my call. I'm doing fine, and happy broke day to you. I would call it Valentine's Day, but happy broke day to you. Listen, John, I touched base really on something I wanted to catch up on. I want to just say, first of all, give Russ Brannon a lot of credit. This offseason, he went ahead and he lost the defensive coordinator, and he went ahead and got Jim Schwartz in here. And on top of that, it brought Todd Downing in from Detroit, which Jim Schwartz knew the guy. But what you really have, John, is you got a backup plan all the way around. Russ is covering his tracks all the way around. Number one is if it doesn't work out with this coaching staff that we have, he already has the next head coach, and he already has the next offensive coordinator already on board. At the exact same time, Jim Schwartz is a defensive-minded guy anyway. So the team is covered all the way around. So I'm not saying Doug Marone's going to fail, but I'm just saying I give Russ a lot of credit for keeping everybody covering his tracks.
Let me just say, Butch, let me just stop you for a second. I don't think that was the plan at all. I don't think that was remotely involved in the hiring of Schwartz, or I assume you're referring to Coach Hostler as an offensive coordinator in waiting. I don't think they were thinking that way at all. I don't think they believe that the offensive coordinator, their head coach, are going to fail. And, in fact, you know, those two were really deeply involved in the hiring of the coaches that they hired the last couple of weeks.
Well, I'm not saying that he hired him because he was going to believe they were going to fail. I'm just saying is when it came down to knowing that Mike Pettine eventually was going to maybe take the next job, it's like, who do we bring in here? Don't get me wrong, Jim Schwartz is a hell of a defensive coordinator. He's a hell of a coach, first of all. He's a hell of a defensive coordinator. So basically what you do is, if you really look at it, you got a coach with head coaching experience that's coached in a city like Detroit, same city Ralph Wilson lives in. At the exact same time, we still a blue-collar town like we are. And then on top of that, you've got a guy who's the quarterback's coach now, who was in Detroit, who's offensive-minded, that can eventually move up to be offensive coordinator. So, I mean, we're covered. I just love that. I love that about our football team. But now I'm going to move forward. So I'm listening to the rest of the show, and I thank you for taking my time, taking my call.
All right.
It's just that in the draft, first rounds, I hope Doug Willie move around, pick up picks. Let's lock up 4th, 5th, and 6th, and 7th round. John, take care, my friend. Thanks. It's good to hear from you. Thanks talking to you, my friend. And I'll miss the rest of the show. Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much, Butch, on the east side. I don't agree with much of what he said. I like Butch and everything. I don't agree with much of what he said. I don't think that was any factor at all in the hiring of those coaches. I don't think it's a hidden agenda or something that the Bills are even thinking about. No, I don't agree with that. Hey, we are approaching the Combine, and it's coming up very shortly. We'll be there next Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, the NFL Scouting Combine, and the whole entire NFL world is getting ready for that, including draft guru Mel Kiper Jr. of ESPN.com. He did a conference call a week or so ago about some of these draft prospects. Everybody's got their lists. Chris Brown put together a list for us that we're going to use as we work down in Indianapolis next week. Total of 335 prospects at the Combine, 19 quarterbacks, 36 running backs, 48 wideouts, 22 tight ends, 50 offensive linemen, 56 defensive linemen, 35 linebackers, 59 defensive backs, and 10 specialists. Pass rushers, the number one name, believe it or not, and I think you know this, QB's Khalil Mack, who had an outstanding year for Buffalo. UCLA's Anthony Barr, outstanding pass rusher as well. But besides those two, there don't appear to be a lot of 3-4 edge rushers among the premium picks. Mel Kiper Jr. was asked, aside from Khalil Mack and Anthony Barr, who are the best 3-4 edge rushers available in this draft?
Well, the edge guys, if you look at Jadeveon Clowney, would be number one. I think he's a 4-3 defensive end. Scott Creighton from Oregon State is a 4-3 end. Coney Ealy from Missouri would be an ideal 4-3 end. These guys could also play on their feet. Chris Smith from Arkansas, same thing. DeMarcus Lawrence, Boise State. Jackson Jeffcoat, Texas. Marcus Smith, Louisville, could all play on their feet or play with their hand on the ground. Now you look at some of the outside backers who would fit the 3-4 ideally, Barr and Mack certainly. Mack could have an incredible combine workout and really shoot up. I have him going 7 right now to Tampa Bay. I mean, he could jump into the mix, at 3. Very easily. Another 3-4 outside linebacker, D. Ford from Auburn. You saw him at the Senior Bowl practices do very well. Had a nice year overall for Auburn. Certainly Trent Murphy from Stanford. I think he's a 3-4 outside linebacker, not a 4-3 end. So those would be some of the guys would fit that outside pass rush type of situation at the pro level.
Mel Kiper Jr. talking about some of the edge rushers and talking about Khalil Mack, talking about him shooting up with a good combine workout. How much farther can he shoot? Kiper has him, he said, at number 7. Some people have him in the top 5. There's not much room left for him to shoot, Khalil Mack, for him to shoot up in the draft rankings. 98 underclassmen available in the draft this year. Not all of them will be at the combine, but a good number of them will be. Mel Kiper Jr. was asked, why is the number of underclassmen going up year to year?
I think a lot of it has to do with injury concerns. A lot of these kids, and obviously the first rounders aren't getting the top 10 guys, they aren't getting the big money they used to, yet they're still, coming out. Now, some of these quarterbacks I thought would have been better served to go back. And not Manziel, I'm talking about Blake Bortles, I thought would have been better served to go back for another year. He would have been certainly at the top of the list. He could have been, I think, a number one pick next year overall. Now he's in the mix to be maybe, anywhere between really 3 and 8. If you really look at it now. So he probably figures, hey, I might have been the number one pick. I might not have been. I'm coming out. I'm going to be a top 10 pick. There's 5 teams picking in the top 10 that need a quarterback. So I think the quarterbacks looked at that, number one. And I think a lot of these other kids looked at the fact that, hey, last year's draft wasn't super, super strong in terms of depth. They figure, okay, let's come in this year and certainly not worry about going back and risking injury. Look at Jadeveon Clowney. That's all he worried about, it seemed like, this year, was getting hurt after 2 great years at South Carolina. So I think the injury factor, more than anything, is the reason why a lot of these kids leave early, some of whom didn't even have great years and are leaving early. They really needed another season to maximize their value, still decided to come out, which was very surprising this year.
98 underclassmen, and he makes a good point about that. And the other point is a lot of them want to get to that second contract, the big cash-in contract after a couple of years in the league. You heard our last guest, Scott Kasner, talk about tackle being the position of need for the Buffalo Bills. There are some good ones, as he pointed out as well. Jake Matthews, Texas A&M, Greg Robinson of Auburn, and Taylor Lewan of Michigan, 6'7", 315-pound tackle, regarded as one of the top tackles in the draft. Mel Kiper Jr. with his thoughts on Michigan offensive tackle Taylor Lewan.
I think he's a heck of a prospect, and I've thought that all along. I mean, people were questioning Lewan. I didn't understand during the year. It wasn't him. It was the interior of the line. So it wasn't Schofield and Lewan. It was the interior, the center and the guard spots that were kind of changing by the week and were inexperienced players. So, Taylor Lewan has outstanding feet, balance and pass protection, technically sound, has that nasty streak you love to see in a left tackle. Michigan's obviously produced a lot of players at that position over the years moving on to the NFL. If he gets down to 11 to Tennessee, he's a heck of a pick. He could go 2 to St. Louis. I mean, he could certainly go somewhere in that top grouping. Buffalo at 9 is another team looking maybe at an offensive tackle. So I think he's one of the best. Right now, I would say if you had to say where he ranks on the board, he would be in the top 10. I have him at 8 right now on the big board. So he's a top 10 guy, 8. You could push him up as high as even 5 if you wanted. He's an elite prospect, and I think he's going to go pretty high. I have him at 11 because you have to, Greg Robinson at Auburn, you got Jake Matthews, and then you have Lewan. Three left tackles battling between now and May 8th to see who's going to be the first one taken. He's right in that mix. He could be the first left tackle taken, second or third. He's not going to be any deeper down than the third. So I don't think he gets past Tennessee at 11, and he could go as high as 2 to St. Louis.
Tackles, there's a lot of them at the top of the draft. Last year, of course, the top 2 picks were offensive tackles. Mel Kiper, they tried to pin him down on this conference call and ask him who is the best offensive tackle in that group of tackles near the top of this year's NFL draft.
I don't know if there'll be a consensus there. I think right now you'd have to say Robinson slightly. I think Lewan's pushing Matthews maybe slipping back just a bit because some think, and I've talked to you, think more right tackle than left tackle for Jake Matthews. Remember, he played right tackle as a junior, left tackle as a senior. But all three of those guys are going to go somewhere in the top 11, maybe even in the top 9 overall. So, but it's still, like I say, a long way to go. But if I had to say right now, the way the majority of teams have it, it would be Robinson, Lawan, Matthews. That's the kind of the way I see it right now in terms of the way those three will come off the board. But I went with, after all said and done, in the last projection, I went number one offensive tackle being Robinson at 2 to St. Louis. I put Matthews in at Buffalo because he can play left or right tackle very effectively. Lawan's a true left tackle. So really, like I say, within the first 9-11 spots, those three are going to go. And right now, I'd say it's Robinson and then Lawan or Matthews battling for that second spot.
Yeah, those three are the top three. Greg Robinson of Auburn, Jake Matthews from Texas A&M, Taylor Lawan of Michigan. How do they compare? You know, last year, there were tackles taken three of the first four picks. Eric Fisher, number one overall, went to Kansas City. Luke Jokel, number two overall, went to Jacksonville. And Lane Johnson, number four overall, went to the Philadelphia Eagles. Mel Kiper Jr., on comparing the top three tackles last year, those three, to the tackles who are coming out this year.
They all had their share of struggles, and they had some good moments. Fisher, of course, had some issues at Kansas City. The one game, I remember, I was thinking, boy, he's turned a corner, and they fell back a bit, had some minor injury issues. But at the end of the day, they hope he can be an outstanding player, and maybe he won't be out. Maybe he'll just be very good. Lane Johnson had some good moments. He made it into my top 30, 35 rookies on the top 25 big board. He was right around that 25, 30 area a lot during the year, especially late in the season. And Jokel, of course, we'll see what he does in year two. And of course, he'll be a key component there. A new quarterback probably taking over. Gus Bradley, I think, has laid a good foundation. I think Gus Bradley is going to be an outstanding football coach in this league, head football coach. So we'll see. I think the jury's still out. That's still to be determined there. I will say this. The three left tackles this year, when you think about where they are, with Greg Robinson, Jake Matthews, and Taylor Lawan, all three will have a higher grade than the three we talked about from last year, the one at the top of the board. These three will have a higher grade than those three. And one was the number one pick overall in Fisher. So that tells you that this draft is certainly much stronger than last year's.
Think about that. And that's Mel Kiper. That's only Mel Kiper. But think about that. Those three that we've been talking about, Jake Matthews, Greg Robinson, Taylor Lawan, according to Mel Kiper, are going to have a better grade than the three who went in the top four picks a year ago. It's a different year, different draft, different players. Jake Matthews, Texas A&M, projected to go to the Bills by the guy who's going to be joining us in a minute. Rob Rang is a draft writer for CBS Sports, NFLDraftScout.com. He's coming up next. We'll talk with him about these issues as we get set for the Combine next week. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. We're live tonight from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Next week, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, this show live from the NFL Scouting Combine in Indianapolis. I've figured it out. It's my seventh consecutive year going to the Combine. I look forward to it. It's you kind of immerse yourself in the draft, and then it'll be all draft all the time on this show until the first round day on May 8th. The guy who does it all year long joins us on the line now from his home in Seattle. He is a senior draft analyst for NFLDraftScout.com, Sports Exchange, and CBSSports.com. Rob Rang on the line with us from Seattle. Rob, thank you very much for doing this tonight. How are you?
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me on, John.
It is a year-round endeavor for you, right, to pay attention to the draft and the prospects coming out. It never stops for you.
It never stops. The day after the 2013 draft, I was looking ahead to the 2014 draft class.
Where does the combine, next week's combine, fit into the whole picture, Rob, for you and for NFL teams? How important is next week's combine in Indianapolis?
It's a great question because I think that the combine is becoming more and more popular from a fan perspective and less popular from an NFL scout perspective. The reason why they originally created the combine was to have one place where they could do the medical testing for all of the players that the NFL scouts had thought were likely to be drafted a couple of months later. And it certainly the combine still has that type of impact for NFL teams. But at the same time, with the combine preparation that now goes in for all of these players who instead of going to all-star games, they're preparing themselves to run as fast as they possibly can in the 40-yard dash, the vertical jumps. I don't think that we're getting the true test of their explosive athleticism that we saw maybe years ago. Now we're seeing who prepares the most, which is also obviously important. But I think that when it's all said and done, for myself and for NFL scouts as well, it's 95% of the scouting has already been done. And what has not yet been done is going to be done over the next couple of months as we watch more game tape rather than just who has the best vertical jump or the fastest 40-yard dash time.
Rob, the Bills people will tell you, and they told me over the years, that the most value they get out of the combine are just what you said, A, the medical tests, which are shared by everybody, pretty much everybody, and everybody knows what the deal is, number one. And number two, the face-to-face meetings and football intelligence that they can glean from those little 15-minute meetings they have in the evenings there in Indianapolis.
Well, exactly. You know, it's just like any other job interview that you or I or our listeners tonight might have had. I mean, you want to make sure that the person that you're trying to bring into your organization is going to be someone who can reflect the values that you have in your organization. And so it is essentially a job interview. The coaches, the general managers, the scouts are going to ask the questions to try and get into the head and get into to really discover the personalities of these players. Again, the tape speaks for itself. Anybody who was invited to the scouting combine this year obviously is a very talented football player. Now it's about trying to pick out the personalities that are going to fit your club.
Hey, Rob, how long ago did the trend start of NFL draft prospects really devoting months of preparation for the combine, going to these specialized, performance camps and training for all the individual events that they'll go through? When is that, like in the last 10 years, last 5 years? When did all that start?
Well, it's certainly been at least 10, John, because about 10 years ago, I had an opportunity to go down to what is now called EXIS, but was then called Athletes Performance in the state of Arizona. And I had a chance to just really watch just how specific the training is for these players. And I can give you an example. One player that they were trying to have lose weight, was eating nothing but protein, had every 30 minutes he had to do some other type of aerobic exercise. Another player, they were trying to gain weight. They were filling with all kinds of carbohydrates, pastas, things of that nature. Wasn't doing quite as much of the aerobic exercise, was doing very much more strength training and things of that nature just to get him bigger and stronger. And so, I would say at least 10 years, but I think that with every single year, just as technology advances, that we're seeing more and more of these players who are choosing to ignore the All-Star games and things of that nature, instead get themselves right into these workout facilities so they can prepare themselves for the combine.
And Rob, every year, the stories at the combine become so-and-so's not going to throw and this guy's not going to run, et cetera. Is there hard evidence that prospects damage their chances if they elect not to go through some of the procedures, some of the exercises at the combine?
Unfortunately, there is not hard evidence. In fact, you can make the argument that there is more evidence in favor of not working out. And I think that the biggest thing is that the vast majority of the really, really talented players, especially at the quarterback position, that have elected to push off their workout, end up just being exactly what they thought they were. Very, very talented players who are going to wind up being drafted highly, regardless of whether they work out in Indianapolis or wait for their own individual pro day. I do think that it speaks to the competitive spirit of players who do want to participate at the combine in Indianapolis with the hundreds of NFL talent evaluators there in the stands. But at the same time, if you have a top 10 grade on Johnny Manziel, for example, and he has said that he is not planning on working out in Indianapolis, or at least not throwing, then I don't think that your grade is going to change much if you have to wait until March 27th to throw it live at his pro day.
Gee, Ron, I'm going to hop in a car 7 o'clock Wednesday morning and drive to Indy. I'm wondering right now, why bother? you've almost talked me out of it.
Well, I know if that's all you're doing is evaluating the 40-yard dash times and things like that, then, with the television network and things of that nature that they have now, I think that you might be your time might be served better elsewhere. But at the same time, to me, that the combine is all about getting to know these players, and getting the opportunities that we get. The media access there is just phenomenal, as you well know. And so that, to me, is a big exciting part of it. To be able to talk to the NFL coaches and general managers that come through as well is obviously also very helpful.
We're live on the line with Rob Rang. He is the senior draft analyst for NFLDraftScout.com. He's done a mock draft that is up just a couple of days old. We've been talking a lot about offensive tackles here in Buffalo, at least the fans have, Rob. And people talk about Greg Robinson, Jake Matthews, Taylor Lewan. You have Matthews coming to Buffalo in your latest mock draft at number 9. But it's been said that those three are better than the three tackles who went among the top 4 picks last year. Do you think that's the case?
I do think that's the case. Taylor Lewan, to me, is roughly the equivalent of the players who wound up going among those three of the top 4 picks a year ago. Obviously, Central Michigan's Eric Fisher wound up going number 1 overall to the Kansas City Chiefs. Then Luke Jokel at number 2, Lane Johnson number 4 overall to the Philadelphia Eagles. Taylor Lewan is a very talented, very physical, impressive physical specimen from Michigan, but he is not an elite pass blocker. He's a guy that relies more on his timing rather than his speed off of in pass protection. So I do strongly believe that he can be very successful in the NFL. I just personally would rather see him at the right tackle position. So that's one of the reasons why I would kind of mention him first. But of the other two, Jake Matthews, who you're correct, I do have currently projected to the Bills at number 9. To me, the thing that makes him so exciting is just his versatility. He was an absolute superstar coming out of high school at right tackle for Texas A&M, moved to left tackle as a senior, was a star there as well. I love the fact that he just projects so well because of his grit, because of his toughness, because of his intelligence, projects well of inside, where I think that he can make just as immediate of an impact, even though it would be a little bit of a projection considering that he hasn't played there. And then Greg Robinson from Auburn, my top-rated offensive tackle, the number 2 overall player in this draft class, in my opinion, behind only Jadeveon Clowney. Greg Robinson is an absolute grizzly bear at the line of scrimmage and the way he mauls people in the running game. And so if you're looking for an offensive lineman who's going to be able to give you immediate impact ability in the running game, but is still a little bit unpolished in the passing game, Greg Robinson is a guy that I think has a chance to be a very special player.
Your mock draft, Rob, you have Clowney to Houston with the first pick, Robinson to the Rams with the second pick, and Johnny Manziel, who campaigned hard today to be the first overall pick. You got him going to Jacksonville at number 3. He's going to be, maybe other than Michael Sam, he's going to be the most talked about, followed guy in the combine room next week, isn't he?
Well, exactly. And that's why when we were joking before about maybe we don't need to go to the combine. I mean, to me, to go to the combine and listen to Johnny Manziel, listen to Michael Sam, listen to some of the dynamic personalities in this year's draft class, you know, I'm really looking forward to that element of the combine. And, you know, when you look at this draft class, everybody's going to focus in on the quarterbacks, as they well should, as we just talked about with the offensive tackles. You know, name any number of these quarterbacks, in my opinion, 4 at least would rank ahead of, the top-rated quarterbacks last year. And I like E.J. Manuel, still very much do so, love his upside. But at the same time, I'm looking at the pro readiness that a Teddy Bridgewater brings, the fact that he's coming from a pro-style offense, that he does have some questions about his slim build. Johnny Manziel, of course, with his elusiveness, the way that the NFL is going now to these dual threat quarterbacks, to me, he is exciting as it gets. And Blake Bortles might have the higher upside of either one of them. The 4th quarterback, Derek Carr from Fresno State, has the best arm of any of the quarterbacks in this draft class, in my opinion. So to me, it's a very exciting draft. I'm excited to see where this draft winds up. And I have all 4 of those quarterbacks going within the top 8 picks this year, which, of course, that's a very, very nicely for the Buffalo Bills, sitting there at number 9.
Yeah. The last thing, Buffalo fans are going to keep an eye on the local product, Khalil Mack. You've got him going very early in your first round, too, right?
I do. The Atlanta Falcons, number 6 overall. You know, and it's interesting. In the weeks leading up to the combine, you start to talk to people, and there's actually been a little bit of buzz that Khalil Mack might be a bit of a dark horse candidate for the Houston Texans, number 1 overall. And the reason I say that is not only because Khalil Mack, as you well know, is a spectacular player, but it's also because there is a belief that perhaps the Houston Texans might be looking for some immediate impact ability rather than a quarterback that they're going to have to groom. And so Jadeveon Clowney is certainly, in my opinion, the best player in this draft class. But if you're looking for a pass rusher who is polished and who fits in better in a 3-4 defense, that would be Khalil Mack. And that's why you hear some buzz that he's going to wind up being a top 5 pick this year.
Wow, amazing. Rob, thank you very much for spending time with us tonight. We'll see you at the Combine next week. I'm going. I'm just kidding. I'm going. I like it, too. I like it for the same reasons you do.
Oh, thanks, John. It was a pleasure.
Thanks a lot. Rob Rang, senior draft analyst for NFLDraftScout.com, Sports Exchange. You can read his stuff at CBSSports.com. He's got a mock draft up right now at NFLDraftScout.com. Yep, it's that time of the year, folks. We are getting there, and we'll be there at the Combine next week, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. More to come. We've got a few minutes left. If you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, give us a call at 803-0550. It's the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, live tonight from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Again, thanks to Rob Rang of CBS Sports and the NFL Draft Scout.com. Really good website as you get ready for the Combine coverage next week. And, of course, our website's not bad. We'll be there, Chris Brown and myself, along with an army of producers, and we'll have Combine coverage on the website and, of course, live radio coverage of the Combine right here on the John Murphy Show. A call from Tom in Hamburg. Hello, Tom. Welcome. You're on the air.
Murph, I'd just like to talk about Miami. It makes me feel good that class pros like Freddie Jackson and Kyle Williams would never let that foolishness go on.
Yeah, I think you're onto something. I talked about that a little bit earlier on about the locker room culture and how it is a failure, obviously, in the Richie Incognito situation that the Dolphins didn't have a handle on what was going on, that Jonathan Martin had nowhere to go except to walk away. That's a failure. And don't misinterpret what I was saying earlier. That's not a defense of Incognito. His behavior was way beyond what's acceptable locker room behavior. There's no question about that. But I do think Jonathan Martin, there had to be a better way to handle it than just walk away from the sport. And I think there are a layer of issues there that he's dealing with that go beyond whether or not he was bullied in the locker room. I'm sorry, we don't have more time to talk about that tonight. We're going to be off next Monday for the President's Day holiday, and our pal Sal Capaccio will be hosting this show, so make sure you tune in to Sal on Monday. We'll be back on Tuesday with this show live right here from One Bills Drive, and then Wednesday we're on the road at the Scouting Combine in Indianapolis. Hope you're able to join us next week. Want to thank our presenting sponsor, NOCO, family-owned and locally operated since 1933. Explore what NOCO can do for you at NOCO.com. Our engineer tonight, Tom Reitz, our producer, Anna Stolzenberg, the Bills director of broadcasting, Jeff Matthews. We'll see you Tuesday night with the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.